Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Susan Chizzo as my special expert guest. Susan Chizzo is an orthopedic physiotherapist based in Toronto. She completed her studies at the University of Toronto, starting with an undergraduate degree in physical education and health, and ending with a Master of Science in physical therapy. Susan is also a certified Pilates instructor, regularly using this form of exercise to help her clients build body awareness and strength. She splits her time between two private practice clinics where she sees clients with a range of musculoskeletal injuries. Outside the clinic, Susan can be found behind the computer screen writing an article on injury prevention, or behind the camera pursuing her love of photography. Several of her articles have appeared in a Live magazine, ranging in topics from pregnancy to trail running, while her photography portfolio spans the globe from Canada to Kenya to New Zealand. Good afternoon, Susan, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good afternoon, Corey. Thank you for having me.
I read your article in the recent issue of Alive, was very impressed. And of course, this is an important topic because many of my students are personal trainers. They're engaged in rehab or they are health professionals. And of course, concussion has become more of a concern in recent years. So we'll get into that. But can you tell us why you decided to pursue a career as an orthopedic physiotherapist?
Sure. So the first time I remember ever considering physiotherapy as a career actually wasn't until my first year of undergraduate studies at the University of Toronto. I feel a bit late, but that's what my memory tells me. So that's what I've been going with. I played a lot of sports growing up, so I was a very active kid, but I didn't thankfully have any major injury. So I wasn't really exposed to the field of physiotherapy while I was growing up. A ton of physios will tell you that that's how they got into it, through a positive experience through their own injury. It was actually during that first year of my undergraduate studies, it was during a talk given by a physio. I was at that talk and I thought, this sounds like a very interesting career. I like the idea of having to use my anatomy knowledge on a daily basis, using problem-solving skills just to help people get better. And it kind of stuck with me. I knew it was a competitive program to get into, so I just set my sight program in that first year and went from there. At that time, I wasn't really aware of the different roles available to a physiotherapist, the different areas that they can work in. It wasn't until I was in the master's program at U of T as well that I learned the different types of physiotherapy that one can go into. I think because of my sports background, that was just the one that I could best relate to. I wasn't particularly drawn to the acute setting or the hospital setting, so it just kind of worked out that I ended up in private practice treating mostly orthopedic injuries.
Excellent. Now, for those not familiar with what you do, can you tell us what you do like every day as a physiotherapist, and then also maybe enlighten us about the different ranges of physiotherapy that you were previously talking about?
Sure. So on a day-to-day, in a private clinic, we can see a whole range of different injuries. So someone will come in, we'll sit down with them and do a thorough taking of their history. Following that, start a objective assessment, their posture to start with, then range of motion, strength, the way they move in general, and then more specifically at the different joints. So as an orthopedic physio, we specialize in the care of injuries or pain or conditions involving our bones or joints, muscles, and really all the in between, like tendons, ligaments, discs, cartilage, etc. We're also known as musculoskeletal physiotherapists, so that's a little bit more self-explanatory. So that's one main area of physiotherapy. Another area is neurological rehabilitation. So that tends to be with stroke populations, for instance, whether that's in the acute care setting immediately post-stroke or down the line in a rehabilitation setting, or even, again, in a private practice setting that specializes in neurological rehabilitation. So stroke would be one example. Parkinson's disease would be another condition that those with. And the third area is cardiorespiratory physiotherapy. So that's working with people with breathing issues such as COPD or serious cases of asthma, for instance. Those are the main three areas. I mean, they can be broken down within the orthopedic world. There's also sports physiotherapy, so working with teams on different levels. Of course, there's also the education component where you can be in a university setting, for instance, or a college setting teaching physiotherapy, future physiotherapy students or physiotherapy assistants, for instance.
Okay, so if I asked someone who had just visited a chiropractor, what did he do, or she, they would say, well, they cracked me. They cracked my neck and back. So if I asked someone who had just seen you, what would they say that you did to them?
Well, some physiotherapists also do quote-unquote cracking, so adjusting. I don't particularly have training in that area, so that's not what they would say. They would say I looked at how they move and what might be contributing to their pain from that sense. And I probably would teach them more often the exercises that are specific to their problem that they can work on at home and to try to deal with what they're dealing with at home and then come back to see me for a more hands-on sort of work.
Would you wave your magic wand? Do you use laser therapy or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't have currently, but that is one modality that physiotherapists do use. Ultrasound, therapeutic ultrasound would be another one. Some electrotherapy in terms of just gentle electrical current to deal with pain is another one. I do also have training in acupuncture, so occasionally I bring the needles into a treatment as well. And of course, the Pilates, like you mentioned, in the show, I use that a lot to help correct postural concerns or just as a form of strengthening for people.
It sounds wonderful and eclectic and very functional, which is why I would like to be your patient if I have any problems. Now, you see a wide spectrum of people. How would you describe the state of our population these days? Now, you're getting people funneling in from all walks of life, and you're trying to teach them how to treat it naturally using exercise and improving posture. Where are people at these days? Are they really doing a great job of self-management, or is that something they're just really lacking in, based on your experience?
There's a range. There's definitely some that are they're at that very motivated stage and they really want to get better. So they take everything I give them and take the advice and do the exercises. But then there's the other spectrum is there as well. There's probably more towards the other end of the spectrum where people will say, I did some of the exercise, but I didn't do as much as you told me to, for instance. And I recognize, that's not the only thing going on in their lives. People are busy, they have families, they have jobs, there's potentially other areas of stress involved. So I would say we could definitely do better on that front. So we as therapists have to recognize where people are at in terms of their motivation. Yes, they've come to doesn't necessarily mean that they're ready to do much more than that. So they might be expecting you to heal their problem just through your work, but we have to tell them that that's not the way it works. So which usually helps if we educate and say, this is a two-way street and in the half an hour or whatever it is that I see you for, but there has to be something on your end. Otherwise, we're probably going to stall progress.
Now, how does your fee work in terms of the medical system? Is it partly or fully covered?
So the clinic that I work in is a private practice clinic. So everyone pays out of pocket for their sessions. If they have employment or health insurance through their employer, then they can submit to their employer on their own end and get, usually it's a portion of that back. So there are like OHIP funded clinics around still. There's very few of them, but we're not one of those. So everyone's paying out of pocket for all their services. That doesn't mean we don't get referrals from physicians. We definitely do, but that still works the same way. Though they got to see the physician for free as part of the public health system, when they come to see us, they pay fully for the treatment initially anyway.
So now let's get into the central theme of our discussion. Let's talk about what exactly a concussion is and how it is generally recognized and diagnosed?
Sure. So I should probably maybe preface my answer in saying that concussions are far from a straightforward injury. They have been described at times as one of the most complex sports injuries to diagnose and to manage as well. And that shows in the fact that there's so much research going on behind the scenes, and the definition of a concussion actually has changed over time. And most currently, it is described as a traumatic brain injury. So it's in that category of traumatic brain injury. It's caused by when there's a direct blow to the body, anywhere on the body. It doesn't have to be to the head, but the forces from that blow then are transmitted in a way to the head, and this causes, you know, acceleration, deceleration, maybe rotation of the brain inside the head, some changes in the chemical makeup, and that's what then leads to the symptoms that we can see. So when someone sustains a concussion, within a period of seconds or minutes, there's symptoms that come on. I should actually go back a step for a second and say it's important to remember that a concussion doesn't have to involve a loss of consciousness, but it does result in a change in neurological function. And this, like I was saying, comes on pretty quickly within seconds or minutes. And then for the most part, it tends to resolve on its own 2 to 4 weeks in adults. So the range of symptoms that I was alluding to will be different for everyone. Some common examples are headaches, dizziness. Some people are sensitive to light or noise or both. They may have difficulty concentrating, irritable, have trouble falling asleep. There's a whole range of these, but those are some of the most common. When it comes to recognizing a concussion, it's helpful if you're at the field and have seen the injury happen live, of course. You know, the field is huge. There's a lot going on. It's not always possible to see the incident. Usually there's some contact and a hit involved when we're talking about sports-related concussions. If you're not able to see the actual incident itself, then the next best way to recognize a concussion at the field or at the arena is to the athlete's reaction immediately afterwards. So, for example, are they lying on the field not wanting to get up? Do they get up really slowly? Are they perhaps stumbling or losing their balance once they're up? Do they appear confused? Are they speaking to you? All of these offer clues to whether a concussion has occurred. Now, the complexity comes in is that they might show one of these reactions, but a concussion is not sort of diagnosed by one single thing, so by one symptom or by observing one of these reactions. There's actually no one test to diagnose concussion at this time. If there's a medical professional on the field, they can use what's called the Sport Concussion Assessment Tool, more commonly known as the SCAT-5, five being for just the version of it that's current use. And this, again, helps to identify a suspected concussion, but, again, doesn't diagnose. It usually takes about 10 minutes to complete, and it involves a variety of different things, some of it being testing the athlete's memory, looking at their neck range of motion, their ability to concentrate, or even their balance. There's a few other things in there, but those are some of the things that a trained medical professional would look at on the sideline if they suspect a concussion has occurred. The Sporting Concussion Group that writes the consensus statement every few years, they also support the Concussion Recognition Tool, which is actually for people who are at the field or arena that are non-medical professionals. It's just a way for them to look at the symptoms to see if, again, they can assist in identifying whether a concussion has occurred. But again, not a diagnosis. It's just getting that idea whether a concussion has occurred or not. If it's suspected, the player is not allowed to go back on the field. That's the general consensus. If a concussion is suspected, the athlete must not go back to play. An official diagnosis actually has to be made by a physician. That can be a general physician, your family physician, a sports medicine physician, for example, or a nurse practitioner. That's the only other medical professional that can diagnose concussion. And they would do that, again, following a detailed assessment of the athlete, asking them what took place or if they are not sure, then asking teammates what took place, what symptoms they're currently having, and then also taking a look at their cognitive functioning, how well they're processing things, their balance again, their ability to walk, whether they're steady or unsteady, also vestibular function. And so it's a very complex assessment on their part. It's more complex than what's done on the field. That's the only way that an official diagnosis can be made.
Well, that's quite helpful. Now, how common are concussions in sport today? Are they more common than in the past, based on your experience and research? Or is it the simple diagnosis that's improving, so we're becoming more aware of it?
I believe it's the latter. So, I mean, they are fairly common. They're definitely being reported more in the last decade or so. But I think it is attributed to just having the healthcare world having just more knowledge surrounding the injury itself and how to recognize it and diagnose it. I know it feels like there's more concussions being diagnosed probably through the media because they've become more interested in the injury with the high profile athletes that have suffered concussions in the recent years. But I do think it's just us becoming more aware of the severity of the injury and recognizing it and diagnosing it a little bit better than in previous years. I don't think there's a need to panic and pull ourselves or our children out of higher risk sports, for example, but it's definitely worth staying up to date with the current knowledge and recognizing that, you know, although the media can often blow things out of proportion, it is an injury, and it's one that we don't know a whole lot about all the time, so we do need to stay in the loop and protect ourselves. So perhaps it's good that the media is a little bit more interested in it these days.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I grew up, played a lot of sports like yourself. I played football, I wrestled, played basketball. Some of those sports involved much more head contact, like in obviously in football, also in martial arts. And I never boxed as a mainstay. I tried it a little bit. But as a therapist and health professional, what is your take on athletes, especially young athletes, playing sports where part of the game involves smashing the head on a regular basis? Like, I was surprised to even learn that soccer is high up on the list because of the heading. I never even thought that that would be deemed as a possible source of damage. What actually happens to the brain when it gets repeatedly hit in some of these sports?
Well, like you were saying, the brain does sit in a sack of fluid, so it's not in direct contact with the skull outside of it that protects it. Going back to the definition of a concussion, when you get a blow to the body, whether that's from another person or from a fall or just from a whiplash injury per se, the brain is going to move within that enclosed space because there's room for it to move, and that going back and forth and potentially some rotation in there as well, depending where the force was coming from, causes the brain to hit against the skull. So following that are changes in the chemicals within that space, which then present as these symptoms that I outlined earlier. So yeah, soccer is a surprising one as a risk for a concussion is a sport for many people because technically it's a non-contact sport. But not only is with heading, are you hitting the ball with your head, but there's also other players around. So I believe the elbowing that might happen at that point in time is a concern there with the rules, at least I believe in professional international soccer at that level. With the rules being a little bit more strict around the elbowing, it has led to a decrease in surrounding heading, at least in the international scene. The other sports you mentioned are commonly listed in the research in terms of high risk. So wrestling, football, snowboarding is up there as well. So again, some of these are because they're high contact sports, or boxing, for instance. It's not hard to imagine why you would a head injury there, if not multiple times. Again, we can list the sports and it might frighten parents, for instance, to reconsider having their children play these games. But I think what I would advise is it depends on the level involved and what the coaches are aware of in terms of concussions and what causes them and what's involved increasing the risk. But, and this is why I wanted to write this article that you mentioned at the beginning, just to educate the parents whose children are playing these sports, and also just ourselves who might be playing on, you know, in the evenings or on the weekends. So we're a little bit more aware of what the injury is, and then we can sort of analyze our own situation and recognize that there is a risk, at higher risk in certain sports, but that doesn't necessarily mean we need to pull ourselves out. We need to support, is organized, the league, the competition level, what are the policies at the league level of a sport.
Yes, exactly. Now, what can an athlete do? Let's say that they have a serious head injury and it's been diagnosed, and then maybe the physician has recommended them to you. What is your procedure? What is this person looking at for treatment?
It varies now because, like I said, concussions are very complex and they present differently in everybody. So even between two concussions, that one from the other will present differently. So treatment has to be very individualized to the person. No two people will get the same treatment. Same note of the complexity and the difference in symptoms between people or within people even. Usually the care involves a physiotherapist, also involved athletic therapists, psychologists, neuropsychologists, occupational therapists. So there's a range, and like I said, everyone will require different treatment. Treatment-wise, the first sort of 24 to 48 hours are meant to be a period of rest. People are definitely encouraged to see a physician as soon as possible after injury, but otherwise they're usually not getting any hands-on sort of care within that first 24 to 48 hours. So this period of rest means physical rest, so no exercise, no other form of physical activity, no housework, for example. Not reading, not doing homework, not scrolling through on the smartphone. So they're just meant to try to minimize the energy demands on the brain, which is where the injury is. Following that, a physiotherapist is often involved because when a concussion happens, there's often concurrent injury to the neck, to the cervical spine, you know, stiffness or show impairment in range of motion, for instance. And this can impair their day-to-day function. And so we're involved to try to resolve those areas. When there's an injury to the upper part of the neck, the cervical spine, this can mimic concussion symptoms such as dizziness, headaches, or even vertigo. So we're often working with the athlete to determine if that part of the neck is more the cause of these symptoms as opposed to the concussion itself, which needs time to resolve independently. So we're often doing hands-on with them to try to correct issues in that upper part of the neck if that's indicated. This would likely also involve strengthening of the neck area, just education on how to be more aware of posture. Sometimes even sort of retraining their body, be able to better sense its position in space. So like I was saying, it varies per person, and it is very eclectic as we discuss physiotherapy to be in the first place. Sometimes if the vestibular system or sense of balance is also impacted by a concussion, and it often is. So like I said, people will complain of dizziness. Therapists that are specifically trained in vestibular rehab, whether they're physiotherapists or occupational therapists, chiropractors, athletic therapists, whoever it may be that's specifically trained in vestibular rehab, they step in to help normalize the function of the vestibular system. And so those would be the sort of manual therapists that would be involved. Concussions, when symptoms become more persistent, such as behavioral symptoms specifically, so anxiety or depression, for example, athletes are often referred to help deal with those symptoms, perhaps start cognitive behavioral therapy. So yeah, there's a range of therapists and specialists involved with that physician acting as the first point of contact for diagnosis. And then ideally, there's regular follow-ups to assess progress and to determine a return to play or a return to school strategy. Often the therapists that I mentioned that are involved will help the athlete return to sport strategy that it has been put through by the concussion and sport group that produces that consensus statement I was mentioning. Often the athlete might not quite understand the step-by-step process. So whether they're seeing me for physio or they're seeing an athletic therapist for the strengthening part of things, then we will help guide them through the strategy, the different steps, so that they can return to school or sport safely and when they're ready.
Right. Fantastic. Well, it sounds like the treatment is as complex as the problem itself. Concussions are complex, as you said, and so therefore that would sort of stem into a complexity of various treatments. Did you happen to see the movie Concussion starring Will Smith?
I have seen the movie, yes.
And do you think that was an accurate depiction? Do you think that it's underestimated by professional sports organizations, or was that a kind of an exaggerated Hollywood effort to just entertain people?
No, I think there's truth to that for sure. I think that more organizations, like corporations such as, for example, the NFL in that movie, are aware that people are concerned about concussions now. And so they're at least on the outside making it daycare as well and are trying to make changes. I enjoyed the movie, but I think it was more of the story of the little guy versus the big corporation. They did show some scenes of the mental health issues that can come up post-concussion. But they're, pretty quick scenes, but it was good that they had that in there. And so yeah, it showed a little window into what one can experience following concussion. So I'm happy the movie was made. I mean, it can be considered a form of education in a way, at least to people who have no idea that concussions are an issue in that particular sport that they're a fan of, for instance.
Yes, well said. And thank you for your educational value. It's excellent. I know our people are going to really value what's been said today. Now, what is your website, Susan?
bysusanchizzo.com, C-Z-Y-Z-O.com. And it's a portfolio of, you mentioned in the bio that I have a passion for, and I also do some writing as I did with this concussion article. So it's a portfolio of my writing to date, as well as of my photography in the different places that I've been to over the years. So it's just a place to try to inspire people to live actively, be adventurous, and, also live in a sort of sustainable, holistic kind of way.
Yes, very good. Well, everyone out there, let's get to that website, check it out. And also, Susan's article is in the July 2018 issue of Alive. So look for that in your local health food store and enjoy that information and share that with anyone that you think needs to learn about concussion. Susan, our time is gone. Thanks so much for your contribution for teaching us about concussion and what physiotherapy is all about.
Thank you, Gory. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about something I'm passionate about.
Yes, and so we usually like to have a final parting comment from our guest, something that might motivate us or something that is important to you that you want to convey to our people, our students listening. We've got personal trainers. We've got health professionals like yourself. We've got health food store retailers, lots of athletes, coaches, teachers. What would you send them as a mini message for today?
I'm going to go with the message I tried to send to my patients is just try to be active every day. Do something different if you can. So if you're a dog walker, great, go out and walk your dog, but try to give yourself different movement experiences. So for your students, it allows them to better relate to the clients that might be coming to see them. Try to keep up to date with what's going on in terms of the research. So that you can protect yourself and educate your loved ones as well.
Susan Chizzo is an orthopedic physiotherapist, a certified Pilates instructor, a photographer, and an excellent author and writer. Susan, thank you so much for your contribution. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Corey.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.